this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, welcome back to Y'allitics. Wheeler has his credit card out here.
I do have my credit card out here because I've been tipped off about something that we'll get to in just a second.
No, let's get to it now.
No, we'll get to it in a second.
You're at
buying right now. You've bought this beer that's sitting in front of me.
We're at Bangers in Austin. This is on Rainy Street for you guys who know Austin. Is it not on Rainy Street?
This is Rainy Street.
Okay, yeah. You gave me that look.
It's the Rainy Street.
It is. It's a great place.
Let's get straight to our guests. We have Bud Kennedy from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram with us, longtime friend of ours, another longtime friend of ours and mine, Ashley Godot. She is the managing editor of political content and anchor at KVU-TV in Austin. Thanks for being here, guys.
And both of y'all have been on the podcast with us multiple times, but it seems like we are always doing it by Zoom. This is a way better way to do this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so right? I pulled out my credit card because, you're getting the beers here, Jason. You put that on your card. What are you having, Ashley? Yours looks the most intriguing here at the table.
Because I asked for the most fun drink. When there is a menu with this many options.
How many are there up
there? There's 101.
101
beers. So that's the Malbec? What did you pick
this is... The Moon Tower Pomegranate Rosemary.
Oh, no, that's pretty
cider.
Cider.
It's a cider.
It's very... The pomegranate is pushing through, baby. It is.
This is the East Cider. You know, it's kind of a sunny day, starting to get hot in Austin. So a little cool East Cider is what's happening on Rainy Street.
Well, How about you, Whiteley? What are you having?
Are you okay?
What do you have?
How many are you in here?
I've got two glasses in front of me.
I'm having number 19. It's the Live Oak Pilsner. And it's Live Oak is a brewery here in town, I believe.
It is.
Over by the airport, someone said?
Sure.
Maybe not. I don't know.
There's a lot of breweries in Austin.
Yeah, right.
So.
We could be sitting in it right now.
Testing your knowledge today, Ashley.
What do you have, Wheeler?
I'm having two of them here. And the reason I have two is because you know I never finish a beer. Like I'll drink the first third of it, and then it starts to get warm, and I want another one. The first one was a Pint House Burroughs Breakfast, which was good, but then it got kind of warm, and so I moved on. And what am I having? Ashley, you knew what it was.
You're having the Peacemaker, the Austin Beer Works Peacemaker.
The Peacemaker. I like it. It's crisp.
That's not like Wheeler at all.
So I pulled out my breakfast beer earlier.
Yeah, I did.
A Burroughs Breakfast. And I pulled out my credit card because right before we started this, Ashley threw down some knowledge. You know, Ashley knows her way around Austin like the back of her hand. And you mentioned something that we've been here all week covering the legislature and all of the craziness that's been going on in Austin. We're going to get to that in a sec. But, you know, we've been trying to explore. We didn't know about what you just told me.
You should have texted me. That's what you should have done. Right next door to where we are tiny donuts.
Tiny donuts.
And not only are they tiny donuts, they are warm, freshly prepared tiny donuts. They
is
come
that
in a little
the
cup.
Place?
Tiny donuts. Yes.
Is it a food truck or what?
It's little somebody. Yes. It's a food truck. It's rice pink. You cannot miss it.
We're going. Now there are no tiny beignets or anything else. Just tiny donuts.
No tiny beignets. It's just look. Don't get fancy, bud. Get a donut. Love the little tiny donut. They're great. They're gonna come in a little cup.
So then
all we need
is barbecue, and we've got the Holy Trinity. Then.
So if anyone surrounding us here wants to go make a run, I'm buying if you're flying.
You can have his credit card.
I've got my credit card
out. And you know what else we learned just before we started recording this, too, is Bud Kennedy was one of the original customers on day one at the Texas Chili Parlor
back in the days when I had the spicy chili. So,
wow.
Yeah, but that was back in the that was back when we were having the last impeachment in the Texas House.
That was way back.
In 1976, right?
That's right.
Wow.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
And here we go again.
Yeah, right. The Chili Parlor is still sticking with me a little bit after running by there for dinner.
It sat there in your stomach nicely.
That's a good sign.
Thanks for sharing.
You're having the Malbec, so yeah.
It's not a Malbec.
It's not a Malbec.
I knew you were going to judge my drink. I knew you were going to have something.
You did say that.
Whiteley is very judgmental.
Let's get into it while Wheeler's slamming his second pint over here.
Sipping.
You know, the end of the legislature, Bud, you mentioned this last week. The end of the legislature is always kind of hectic because the lawmakers always work best when they're on deadline, like kind of like me and definitely like Wheeler.
Oh, God.
But no one saw the big news that's going on down here. I don't think anyone saw it coming with the impeachment articles the House General Investigating Committee sent to the House floor.
I think that's one of the questions is, was this intentionally pushed to the end of the session? And, you know, why did we wait until the last week to take this up? But we always have all this craziness. Now, it's not as bad as because they have these set calendars that you have to, the House has to pass Senate bills by a certain day. You don't have the crazy last-minute rush anymore where they're turning the clock back and things like that. But this has thrown another whole wrench into the last week of the legislature. Now, impeachment doesn't have to end on Monday. Impeachment can continue as long as it takes. But, I think there's a good question of why this waited to the last minute. I think it's to put pressure on the Senate.
I disagree.
What do you think?
I think you had to get it right. I think if you're coming after the Attorney General of the state of Texas, who is a diehard, friend of former President Donald Trump,
right?
I think if you're coming after him in reliably red Texas, you've got to get it right. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting as I'm sitting here thinking back on things. It was a few weeks ago that the Speaker of the House indefinitely excused the absences. This was right after Brian Slayton. Mm-hmm. He indefinitely excused the absences of the committee. Mm-hmm. And I wish, my antennas went up, but I said,
Right.
What is that? I mean, they've been investigating since March. I think they have to get the articles right if you're going to go after him. And you can't afford to mess it up.
Just for context on that, the committee you're talking about is the House General Investigating Committee. Right. This was the five-person committee that was investigating this.
And the articles that you're
talking... No one knew about it at all, but when the Speaker Phelan said, hey, you guys go do your thing, mm-hmm. no one knew what the thing was about until a couple days ago.
Right, because we had already gotten through... Slayton, you still had the complaint.
Slayton is state rep.
State representative Brian Slayton, Dallas, who was kicked out,
voted
out of the House by the members for allegations against him for his inappropriate relationship with, a staffer mm-hmm. who's under the age of 21,
right?
Who he said to give liquor to, but But we had another kind of investigation pending, and that was State Rep. Jelani Jones from Houston. Who you had some staffers quit because they said, we thought we had these two kind of investigations going on with the committee.
Right.
Lo and behold.
Here we are.
We did know this was out there and that they might take some action on it. We didn't know that they had called so many witnesses and put in so much work and time.
So and so in this hearing the other day, they laid out this laundry list of, potential charges.
Mind-boggling.
It was stunning.
Oh, incredible. Just every time you turn around, you're like, and this. And a lot of it was... things that have been reported over the years, but it was the developer, the affair,
this filled in the details.
There was so much detail, and then there was so much that went on longer than he came back and did that again. I didn't know that. It was like there was all the things that we have known that have been covered in campaigns, but more so with added detail. And it was just the volume of content was really remarkable.
By the way, the four of us, I think, can agree that hearing was fascinating. Like, you didn't want to look away from it, and it went for hours. So if you're listening to this podcast, by the way, go one back. We just recorded a special episode, the one right before this one.
Go one forward, actually, Wheeler. Yeah.
It's one back.
It's one forward.
That's already released.
Not yet.
Okay, it's not released. We're doing this ahead of time.
It sounds like dancing at the broken spokes.
Stick around.
Pretty much.
Stick around.
Our second pint here is really affecting his.
I just got the order
really
wrong.
Is it really a pint? Why are you calling this a pint?
What is this?
It's not a pint.
It's barely a glass.
8
yes.
ounces?
See, he's trying to make it sound like a jug.
The
it's not quite 8. I think it's like 12. We're going to say it's a 12 ounce.
A 12 ounce?
And I only had probably 4 ounces in the first.
Yeah, the voice of Austin.
Now, that's a lot.
Okay.
Don't lie to the people.
Let me ask you this. So this
anyway, podcast, we're doing a whole podcast where we lay out the entire hearing where you can listen to it yourself. And it's staggering when you listen to this stuff. And it produced 20 articles of impeachment, which are like charges, accounts. That will now be, listened to by the House. If the House can get a 2/3 majority.
Simple majority.
Simple majority.
A simple resolution.
So they need 11, right?
11 Republicans with, yeah. no, the, 8.
76 total.
The House, the Senate would need.
The Senate needs
21.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys this. Everything I'm hearing, and you guys probably too, I understand they have plenty of votes in the House mm-hmm. to make this happen. The question is, If the House impeaches Ken Paxton, the Senate would try the case. Paxton would present his evidence, his defense, and the House investigators would put on their case as well. Will the very conservative Texas Senate convict him. Ashley, what are you hearing? What do you think?
All I can think about is how incredibly uncomfortable that is going to be for Senator Angela Paxton.
Mm-hmm. His
who
wife.
We should point out in that hearing also, I mean, they made her party to some of this. We're talking about the Paxtons claiming two homestead exemptions.
Right.
We're talking about some of the things she was requesting in the sort of agreements with Nate Paul about renovations of housing and things that, do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so she's Ken Paxton's wife.
She's Ken Paxton's wife. So.
And obviously the allegations of affairs on
well,
his part. Yeah.
I think that's above her now, right? That has happened.
Right.
That's not new. I think it would be hurtful, but we're also
still
talking,
awkward to hear that aired out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again and again, kind of flaunted in front of you. But I don't know. I think the Senate, I don't know. I really don't know.
But the full court press is on this, though, and not just here in Texas, but nationally. He's got some, Paxton has some people coming to his defense.
Well, you know, they brought out all the Twitter sphere and all the attack dogs that are the whole, you know, conservative movement.
Stephen
attackers.
Miller.
I call them the flying monkeys. They've set in the flying monkeys to attack Dade Phelan over this. But the important thing to remember is that the Senate can do whatever it wants. The Senate can convict on one account or on 20 accounts, but then the Senate also gets to choose the punishment. The Senate can choose to remove, not to remove, to reprimand, to make him stand on his head for 60 seconds. The Senate has total control and can levy whatever punishment it chooses. It can convict without removing him. So it's open to the senators to decide what they want.
I didn't realize that the Senate can decide the punishment. I thought that might have been laid out in statute or laid out in the Constitution. And just a quick side note, we didn't mention this in the beginning, but we also interviewed Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. We're putting his entire interview in which we ask him about whether there are enough votes in the Senate to convict. That's going to be at the end of this conversation with Bud and Ashley.
So you asked us a question and you know the answer?
Yeah, you got to listen to the podcast, Ashley.
What?
Jason does this a lot.
Jason, this is not fair.
So, you know, my thing is that, so Paxton has come out through the chief litigator in his office, basically saying, you know, these are misleading charges. They can all be explained. You know, hopefully we'll all get to hear those explanations soon. But then, you know, there's a real concerted effort being made now by Paxton to say this amounts to, you know, this is sort of a, you know, if you will, a political witch hunt, even though it's Republicans who are in the majority pushing this through. And he's saying that they're trying to get rid of him because he's pushing conservative principles and they are too liberal, and that they are trying to disenfranchise Texas voters, that voters have known about all of these issues that are being alleged before the last couple of elections, and that they kept electing him. I would bring up, though, the Texas Politics Project, which last year before the primary asked people, what do you know about the problems Ken Paxton is facing? 82% of them either said they had some, not very much, or nothing at all on this. 18% said they knew a lot.
Yeah, nearly half of Republicans said they knew almost nothing about it.
Yeah. So I don't think people knew. And, I mean, we cover this stuff for a living. We didn't know half of what was laid out the other day in this hearing.
Well, you know, I think that when you look at that and you look at the reaction, I mean, this is, we're looking at impeachments now through this political prism of first the Clinton impeachment many years ago, and lately the Trump impeachment, where everything is politicized.
Impeachments.
And it's my side against your side, and it's not looked at as upholding the law anymore. Impeachment, you know, there have been people forced out of office under threat of impeachment for small amounts of money and for signing the wrong document. And, you know, there have been officials who went to prison for, some sort of signature violation. And you know, when you have that kind of emphasis in the past on whether the law was broken or not, and now it's all about is my side winning or is your side? And we're looking at this through the presidential lens. Mm.
Can we move on and talk about the legislative session? Now, it's like we've totally forgotten that they were in the last week of a session. I mean, this just blew everything up. You have to imagine this blew up their calendars a little bit there in the House and Senate as well. It kind of brought things, it seems, to a little bit of a halt. It was a huge sideshow that became the center stage. I think going into this one, a lot of, you know, if you asked ordinary people, what do you want? A lot of people were looking for property tax relief. probably part of the reason they were looking for that is that they were promised that out of this session. Boy, that's been a back and forth between Republicans as well. Turf war. Yeah.
They're right. Still not there, which means you can't pass the budget. And you know what? As I'm listening to you say this about the calendars, it makes sense to not bring it. I know we're done with Paxton, but this is my last thing.
Go ahead.
It makes sense not to bring it until now after they've already taken their last. They cannot take any more initial votes. Everything has to be done. So let's say the voting is done. We just got conference committees and we got to, you know, they're big bills that we got to wrap up.
Sure.
But we just got to wrap up those bills and they're in conference committee. So go ahead and give them something to do, like indicting the attorney general.
Mm-hmm. And the last few days of the legislature, you know, are usually pretty slow.
Sure.
Pretty slow. This one's certainly different, though.
Well, isn't this the purpose to say, okay, Senate, instead of complaining about all the things the House didn't do, let's just give the Senate a big to-do list here at the end of the session. Let's just hand this hot potato over to the Senate, keep Dan Patrick busy. You know, it's a month ago that Dan Patrick started calling the Speaker of the Texas House California Dade. I mean, all this volatile, you know, mean-spirited behavior started with Dan Patrick calling Dade Phelan names, and now they've made him a target. So I think some of this is the House turning it back on the Senate.
And again, this is Republican on Republican here, and we had these dueling plans with regard to property tax relief. The House wanting to, you know, cap what your appraisal can go up by maximum each year. The Senate saying, nah, we want to make that homestead exemption a lot bigger. And then the House one-upped them and said, okay, yeah, let's make the homestead exemption bigger. Let's take it all the way to $100,000. And put in a cap on how much your appraisal can go up each year. And now the Senate is left kind of holding the bag on this. You know, that's something that's hard to take away from homeowners in this state once it's been put out there. People heard $100,000 homestead exemption. That's way better than the $40,000 I'm getting now.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's really interesting about that is what we haven't heard from the Lieutenant Governor on that. So you had press conferences where Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said, I'm not negotiating bad math. Appraisal caps are dead. Dade Phelan is wrong. You know, I know no one likes to admit when they're wrong, but he's wrong. I mean, he was really coming after him with some fiery language. And then the House said, okay, we got you.
Mm-hmm.
Boop, we're going to put it all together. And then we haven't heard anything.
And then crickets. Yeah,
it's
been
crickets. And it's like, well, do you like this plan? You talked really – so because how can you now go back? I think one thing about Dan Patrick is once he says something, he has said – like he has spoken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you don't tend to see him kind of go back on what he says. And so I think is he going to have to eat his words a little bit on appraisal caps because the House put it in? I don't know.
And appraisal caps are popular with people too. If you ask the average Joe, like, hey, how would you like to make an appraisal cap where they can't make your property appraise more than 5% each year, a lot of people would go, heck yeah, sign me up for that.
Yeah,
well, appraisal caps are popular with businesses.
Right.
That's the problem. It's the businesses that would get the appraisal cap.
That's the poison pill.
And so what's that going to do to schools?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. Funding of schools. Hey, Patrick told me, and you'll hear later in this podcast, Patrick said that they are the one-yard line on figuring out property taxes. And he thinks that's going to get figured out before the gavel falls on Monday.
Before Monday. You know, we knew so much of this session was going to just fall in place the way it did. We knew that gambling was going to pass the House and not go anywhere in the Senate.
Right.
We knew that vouchers were the opposite, that they were going to roll through the Senate and that the House would throw up the brick wall. Everything was predestined. Even a lot of the votes on school books and on
library books
performances. Burlesque performances. All this was pretty much predetermined. But, you know, it was the taxes that was up in the air, how they were going to resolve this tax question.
Can we talk about school vouchers here? Because, the governor expended a lot of political capital out there campaigning. You'd think he was up for re-election. I mean, he was going around this state barnstorming, saying, hey, we need these ESAs, education savings accounts, a.k.a. school vouchers or school choice. And it hasn't moved. Does that go to special session just because he has put that much of his own capital into this?
Well,
because it doesn't look like it's happening.
I think the question is, will the votes change in special session? Because the House says no right now. And if this is on the call that the governor makes, if he makes a call and he puts this on there, which it sounds like he will the votes change?
Especially in suburban and rural
perhaps
areas.
Perhaps there should have been meetings with the lawmakers instead
before?
Of
yeah.
going out on
rallies.
Big campaign and holding rallies. I mean, we've heard now that after, towards the end of these rallies, towards the end of the session, now there's been polling of the members and talking to the members.
Mm-hmm. After the fact.
After you've gone out. And, you know, maybe that was the plan, right? Maybe the strategy was get the people fired up about it.
Amp up
and
that
then,
pressure.
And then the lawmakers will fall in line and do what their constituents want. But if it does not get passed after everything you've put into it.
Right.
In these past 140 days, do you really want to call a special session and then they not do it again? Is that what you want? You know, not a good look.
Yeah,
I think you know what's happened here is that we need to remember, and we talked about this on Inside Texas Politics going to the session, the narrative has changed. Vouchers were a big part of what looked like a 2024 campaign for Greg Abbott. If he was in the picture for the presidential race, he needed, you know, to prove that he could get vouchers passed and get other credibility nationwide. You know, at some point during this session, it's changed now to where, you know, maybe Abbott's not in that picture, more maybe a running mate candidate for someone, you know, probably not DeSantis, but if there's another Republican candidate, obviously DeSantis wouldn't be a running mate, so they come pick up Abbott from Texas maybe as a running mate. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, at the beginning of the session, he wanted to look more conservative and pass vouchers. At some point, he wanted to be more middle of the road and just not be a weight on the ticket. And so the 2024 narrative, you know, kind of changed the whole approach. The vouchers will, he will bring them back, I think, and try one more time, along with the other measures that have failed, the bail measure, a few other. He'll have a short session with a few to-do lists. And the House does have a proposal. It's just really limited. It's a small voucher for a few kids. And I think they will come back and work on it again. But if that fails, I think they'll let it go.
But why would Abbott take the chance of that failing and being an embarrassment? Or would it be a political embarrassment if he couldn't get the votes on it?
I think it's forgotten. Well, I mean, first of all, he's got a compromise now. He just, you know, if he can press for a little bit better compromise, then it's not a failure.
And the compromise is the House wants to do this just for special education programs, I believe. That's the compromise, right?
And under low income.
And right. Low income.
And F-rated
schools.
Smaller
group of people.
But it helps F-rated schools. If your school's an F school, then you get a voucher. And some of the other, some of the other measures, open boundaries, they do away with some of the attendance zone boundaries and things like that, that will open up more choice for parents.
Well, here's another hot potato that's tied to that, though, because they ended up coupling those school vouchers with teacher pay raises, and when it started sinking, that went down with it. Here you are in a state where you've got a record, $33 billion surplus this time, and you can't give teachers the raise now that you had, touted over and over again going into this session. That's a tough one, too.
Yeah, because the other thing is, look at the number of Republicans who sided with Democrats when they were voting on the budget to say no vouchers. I mean, that was an amendment that the House added to its version of the budget. So how do you justify that? How do you work that out and say, okay, but how about this, guys? I mean, I just...
So unless teacher pay raises shows up on a special session call, here we are in the middle of inflation, too. Teachers left with two more years.
That's the thing. If HB 100 dies, HB
100 is a school funding
teacher
bill.
Raises,
it's a House Bill 100.
It's all tied in there together.
It's near the end as we speak.
And I think, exactly, if that dies, that's why you have to call a special session. You cannot let teachers not get a raise. Mm.
And one of the reasons it might die is now it's back in the House hands, and the Senate said, okay, well, let's put in ESAs, what Jason was just talking about, education savings accounts.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that they don't want them over in the House.
Right.
And
yeah.
So it puts the pressure on the House to either pass this or
be the ones who didn't give the raise
kill
to teachers, is the way it would be.
Right, and just on Thursday, keeping in mind the session ends Monday, on Thursday they appointed the conference committee. So is the weekend enough time to get it done and make everybody happy?
And things have to be
done
by Saturday,
right?
We need
the Senate conferees, and the House is still set against it. The House hasn't budged a bit.
Yeah, one other thing that didn't, a biggie that didn't get through was, you remember, after Uvalde, we had those Uvalde parents showing up to this legislature daily, okay? You remember after Uvalde, we were told, it's not guns, it's people, it's so-and-so, we're going to, here's a thought, let's put an armed officer at every campus. Well, that's not happening either. You got a record surplus and you're not committing the funds to do it.
That was gutted out of the bill.
Well, the Senate took the money out, right? The House put the money in. The Senate took the money out and said we can't afford it. We don't have enough law officers even to staff our departments we have. And so,
yeah, that's a question I asked Patrick in the interview you're about to hear too. And he said essentially you don't need one officer per campus. You need more than one. What if that one has to go on sick leave or his or her spouse is out? Then that place goes uncovered. So he said you need three per campus, and we just don't have the money for three per campus across the state for 8,000 campuses across the state. So,
which the Senate just said we can't afford it. Texas can't afford it. The main point is there are not enough officers out there to do that. So,
and then Roland Gutierrez says, his response to us, the state senator from San Antonio who represents Uvalde, he said, "Well, here my colleagues are," Gutierrez said, "really worried about giving us a couple hundred bucks off our taxes instead of funding school security to keep our kids safe."
There are still local options. In Fort Worth has the half-cent crime tax that funds school security and police on campus. There are still local crime district taxes that can fund that.
How much could that pay for, though, Bud, in Fort Worth? How much could that pay for?
It pays for an officer at every high school or middle school. At the time, the problems at elementary schools weren't anticipated.
And there are obviously more elementary schools in every district.
And that's paid for out of sales tax money that's raised through the crime tax. Any entity can establish a crime district tax and raise money for local school officers. Mm.
Let's go to the grid now. It's always a favorite. This was a huge issue, obviously, in the last legislative session after we had the near total collapse of the electric grid in Texas back in February of 2021. A lot of people said, boy, enough did not get done in that last session. We should get it done in this session. There was some stuff done with regard to the grid, but it sounds like there were some favorites picked in Texas Energy is what happened.
I mean, the bills going into this session on the grid were interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, so Texas should build a backup. We should build our own backup power supply. It's just they were interesting, expensive deals. And I just, there's a lot of oil and gas money in Texas, and I just don't know how you keep everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans campaign on three issues: God, guns, and oil and gas.
Mm-hmm.
That's who came away the big winner. Wind, solar, we can't put any money into that. It didn't produce for us. We've got to put more money into natural gas. The natural gas comes out the overwhelming big winner, more money than ever. Set aside special low interest loans. The natural gas industry comes out as the huge winner. So far this session, we're not quite to the finish line.
And even some experts will say that this is not going to create a lot of new natural gas electricity generation in Texas. What they've done is not wanted by the industry necessarily. Wind and solar was really worried going into this session. They have to, not be thrilled with what they've gotten, but they have to also be happy about some of the bills that didn't make it through, including, maybe one of the most onerous ones for wind and solar, which was you got to notify everybody within 25 miles if you plan to do a wind and solar project, and if any of them say we oppose that, then you might get derailed.
Now they're adding more gas plants that can freeze. I won't be cynical. I'm not here to be.
You already did it.
Batteries and stuff like that too, which are needed for clean energy.
Sure, yeah. But at the end of the day, all Texans want to know is I don't want my power to go.
Right.
End of the day,
keep the lights on.
Right, and so once we hit a record summer, and then we have hurricane season, mm-hmm. and we go through all the things that y'all know we're gonna go through.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the votes
And the
say.
Primary issue, I'm going to take the side of the natural gas folks here and say their point was, okay, look, it's not profitable for us
right.
to build excess capacity. If you want us to build extra plants, you're going to have to help pay for it. And
right.
so that's the industry's argument.
And the extra plants are obviously important because they can be turned on like that, whereas if the wind's not blowing or it's a cloudy day, then renewables might not be working.
Yeah, you need something can flip the switch on.
Yeah, I have two last questions here for you. We'll kind of make this a bullet round. What surprised you most in this session? Bud, we'll start with you.
I think the bitterness, the tone was miserable from the get-go. I don't think I ever remember a session where there was just so much acrimony between the factions of the Republican Party. The Democrats are just kind of attendees, with very little role, but the bitterness of the investigations, the loss of the previous House Speaker, who was deposed in an ugly way. That acrimony continues. Greg Abbott is just trying to rise above it all, and you've got everybody just fist fighting. And that wasn't a short answer.
Democrats are attendees. That's
I think my biggest surprise is Roland Gutierrez, Senator Roland Gutierrez from San Antonio, who represents Uvalde. I knew the moment that he decided to pull a Beto O'Rourke and stand up during that those news conferences and kind of, you know, mm-hmm. give the top three a piece of his mind.
In the days after Uvalde.
In the days after the Uvalde shooting, I kind of knew things were going to be hard for him. But I thought that what the people of Uvalde went through mm-hmm. would have been enough to at least warrant some sort of hearing where they would have been able to tell the Senate a piece of their stories.
Ashley, you saw what happened in Sutherland Springs when people were gunned down in the church. That didn't shake.
I'm not saying
the pink granite building down here.
I understand, but I understand, and that was tragic. And one is not more tragic than the other. But what I'm saying is, you had children killed in a school.
Yeah.
And that I'm not. We all know the bills. We all know that where they were going to go, and how successful. But to not even be able to hold a hearing on a bill when we have hearings on.
And that's because no one wanted to be on the record, right?
Well, no,
because
you could have left it pending. Senate could have just left.
There are options for it.
Again, you didn't have to do anything. You could have protected your members and still at least given the people a chance.
And the shock about that is not just the that they didn't hear the children's stories and hear the Uvalde people. The shock is that nothing's happened to the DPS to hold the DPS accountable. And nothing's happened, you know, with all the flaws and failings. And it's a year later. Yeah, where we had three people terminated.
Yeah. Right. Two and a half. Yeah, it's incredible. So the last thing I have, how would you rate this session? I started with you last time, Bud. I'll start with you, Ashley. You guys have covered a couple of these.
Can you tell me what the rating system is?
Right. I need more. 1 through 5. Give me 1 through 5.
1 through 5 of how
sweet
well
or
they
bitter.
Did.
Yeah.
Oh, it's bitter, honey. I get a 2.5.
That's in the middle.
That's higher than I thought you'd get.
That's much higher.
I'm a fair and just kind of gal.
I thought it might be a 0.25.
No, I mean I'm gonna give them. I mean, they got a few things. Well, I'll write a 2.
Okay.
They got
two.
A few things done. Did that? But as I'm sitting here, I'm asking myself, did they get a few things?
They're not done with everything yet.
The Crown Act passed.
Yes,
the governor hasn't signed it
Does
yet.
It get signed, though,
he
is the question.
Signed it. Wait, he just doesn't have to veto it. You know, like, you don't got to sign it. You don't have to like it. Just don't veto it.
And yeah, he has, so many days to sign it or it goes into law, right?
Correct. Yeah. And yeah, so that's fine. So that's my big win for the session, and I'm going to receive that win. And so I'm going to give them a 2. They passed some good things.
And the Crown Act, for people that haven't followed it, is by state Representative Retta Bowers, and she's out of Dallas County. She's trying to get this passed for, I think, 2 or 3 sessions now, yep. 2 sessions now. And it essentially says you cannot discriminate over somebody in school or any public university or public office for someone's hairstyle.
Right.
And I think what was interesting about this is that, and we've covered this on our programs before, it didn't pass last time, didn't get a committee last time, or it got out of committee, didn't get to
the
floor.
House, the Senate. No, it passed the House.
It did pass the House.
It got added to a bill as an amendment.
And it died in the Senate, didn't it? It just ran out in the Senate. But she took the word dread out of there for dreadlocks.
And that was the only change.
That's the only change she made. Took the word and did put locks in there. And I asked her, too. I said, do you think that got it over the top? Because I think you mentioned she was taking, Representative Bowers, a Dallas Democrat, was taking pictures with Dan Patrick at the end of this thing, which was interesting because she had tremendous Republican support behind it this time.
Yeah.
She didn't know if the word dread had much to do with it, but she got it across the finish line. That's
I personally
huge.
Don't like the word dread.
Why don't you
dread
like it?
Dread carries a negative
That's what she said.
Connotation. Right. And so for me, even when I've had my hair in locks before, faux locks.
Faux locks.
That means fake locks.
I figured that one out.
Okay.
Wheeler didn't take French. He doesn't know that one. Yeah,
you know, I would not. I like the term locks. Yeah. I think it's more. I don't like the word dread.
Well, apparently lawmakers liked it too.
Yeah.
This time,
Bud, same thing for you.
I don't have I don't have enough hair for locks.
It's all, that's why you need faux
locks.
It's
all gray anyway.
Faux locks.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say a 2 as well. I think there wasn't any great. Certainly, there was no big new ambition about health care. We've seen past sessions where you know curing cancer and you know lofty goals for higher education. Just none of that. There was no new added bonus for the state of Texas out of this session. There was just holding the line. This session, the House didn't get run over bullied or bulldozed by the Senate the way it did last time. I think the House would say it was successful. But now we have this end of session surprise, which is another round of Wile E. Coyote chasing the Roadrunner. We'll see how this cartoon ends.
My last question for both of you is the red meat question. We saw a lot of it in the last legislative session pass through. This time there were some of, you know, the so-called, you know, voter integrity bills. You know, some of those didn't get any traction, really. And, of course, there were the restrictions against transgender kids that did get quite a bit of traction this time. What would you rate the red meat factor in this one? Is it enough to keep the base happy as we're seeing, you know, the GOP go at itself here in Austin now? Were they able to do enough, you think, to please the base?
Oh, I think so. I mean, we DEI is still on the table, mm-hmm. right? Because in tenure, because we've got some issues with federal funding, so those things are in.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Right, sorry, yeah. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. I talk ledge, okay?
You do.
You
do.
100% ledge jargon. Legilese.
Ledge. Yeah. Ledge is one. Legislature.
Ledge is one. Legislative. True. I work in Austin. Send me some slack. So I think those things are
have
stupid.
More Malbec.
It's a cider. So I think they will be happy. Drag shows, whether you want to call it drag shows or you want to call it something else.
Bud called it burlesque, I think, right?
Yeah. Bud did call it burlesque. I let him make it, though. See,
family show.
We didn't say it about it.
I wanted to stay within state law, Jason.
Right.
You know, you talk about medications for transgender children. Some stuff with library books, some stuff with schools.
Yeah.
So I do think that the base, the red base, will be pleased, for sure.
There's always a sacrifice to the right-wing voters. There's always something that the House says, okay, we got to let it go. A couple of sessions ago, it was sanctuary city status. You know, there's always somebody that the House just says, okay, we got to let this one go so we can have it in our campaign ads. This time it was the, you know, children's, teens transgender surgery, you know, was the issue to placate the voters the next time around. The House always puts one bill in there and just kind of hints around. Everybody says, look, y'all, we hate this, but we've got to pass it because we need something to run on so we can be back next time. That happens every session. That's what happened this time.
That's politics. Over the next 72 hours, I'm really curious about this property tax bill. I mean, I constantly complain about this. They're unsustainable in the state. We've got to do something. Now, whether this is the answer or not, I don't know. But we all got our appraisals recently, and they're no fun to look at.
Feeling it. Yeah, and they, you know, said that they would dedicate, half of that record surplus to this issue. And so far, hadn't happened yet, at least not as of this recording.
Not at the recording here.
I think we need to wrap it up and send it to your interview of the lieutenant governor here so folks can listen to that while I go get some of these donuts.
You're still thinking about donuts.
I'm still thinking about those
donuts.
Thank you
all so much for joining us down here, and cheers to you guys. Really
thanks, Jason. Thanks, Jason.
Cheers on getting through most of the session.
You haven't finished your Malbec there.
Everybody's going to listen to that committee replay.
Stop judging me.
All right, here's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting for another smart conversation on Eolitics.
Governor, good to see you again.
Glad to have you in the Capitol.
We appreciate you having us down here. Hours left in the regular session. What issues go to a special session right now?
Well, we still have a little bit of time as we do this interview, a little bit of time left to decide on the final legislation dealing with the grid, which is my number one priority. You know, everything is important, but if there's not power, that trumps everything. So that's very important. We're very close, I think, but still have to resolve that. School choice is now attached to the school funding bill, teacher pay and funding our schools. So it's all one big bill. So that will be decided. And then we have property tax, which I think we're very close. Look, Jason, here's the deal. We have put $17.5 billion in the budget sitting there for property tax reform. Without exaggeration, the biggest property tax cut in the history of the world, okay, not just America, not just Texas, of the world, $17.5 billion. And the House has agreed on homestead exemptions. So we're talking now about 100,000, 110,000 homestead exemption. For a senior and under 65, $100,000. So if you live in a $350,000 house, you're only paying property taxes on a $250,000 house. I said during my campaign last year, before I leave, and I'm not leaving anytime soon, I'm running again, but before I leave, I want that homestead exemption to be $100,000, and compression, which helps reduce school taxes for everyone. But we're still hung up over a few little things, and hopefully that all resolves itself, so we'll get that done. But those are the three big things.
Well, why are those issues coming down to the final hours? You guys had 140 days here.
They always come down to the final hours, because these are big things, and a lot of people have a lot of input on the big things. And there's a little bit of disagreement, but you eventually work it out. And if we don't work it out, we'll come back into a special session and work it out. And the differences are small, but they're significant. So they may be small, but they're significant and would change the future of property taxes for decades to come. So that's why we're going to stand very firm where we are. We put $2.6 billion more into compression, which they wanted. They've come on the homestead, which we wanted, exemption. So by the time this airs, we'll all know.
I was going to ask you, is that going to get tied off?
I hope we don't have a special session on that.
Hey, yeah. How close are you to agreement on property taxes?
I think we're very close. Let me say this. Whether it's in the regular session or in a special session, people are going to get the biggest property tax cut in the history of Texas, on top of what we've already done. Because, you know, people have been confused, Jason, and we've done a lot of interviews on this. People still look at their appraisals, and I remind them, don't look at the appraisal, look at your tax bill. And last year, much of the media said what we did in 2019 is working, because the appraisal is no longer attached, for the most part, to your bill, because we limited local government spending to 3.5% increase in their budget. So no matter what your appraisal goes up, they have to lower their tax rate to get it down to about 3.5%. And the Dallas Morning News, Houston Chronicle, Texas Monthly, three publications that don't care much for my conservative values, all said what we did was right. And for the first time, the Houston Chronicle said in decades, property taxes actually were coming down or leveled out, no matter what the appraisal was. So that's why that's been a big issue. We don't want taxes to go the other way.
Education savings accounts passed the Senate. The House has rejected it multiple times. If that issue goes to a special session, is anything going to be different? Are any votes going to change?
Special session sometimes makes people focus a little bit more on issues because in the session, there are, I think the House passed 1,500 bills to us, 1,500, 1,250 in the last 3 weeks, which makes it tough to get to them all. We passed about 700 bills. A lot of those we call local bills, you know, naming streets, doing different things. But about half of those are really big items. But when you come to a special, you know, it's somewhere between 2 or 3 bills, maybe 15 bills, depending on what the governor would put on the call. So it allows you to really put singular laser beam focus all your time, every day, on those issues. So, yeah, it can make a difference.
Do you think any votes might change, though, in the House to actually get that across the line?
I would hope so.
The Senate approved teacher...
School choice, by the way, is so important, Jason. Well, parents have a right to pick the best education opportunity for their child. And there was just a poll out recently, nationally, that parents everywhere want more options for their kids. The days of we're locked into the zip code where our school is are over. And whether it's charter schools, which are public schools, whether it's private schools, whether it's homeschooling, which is exploding. And it's not just because kids are in failing schools. And most of our schools in Texas are good. Most of our teachers are great. But we have 8,000 campuses, 1,200 school districts. They're not all great. And so why should anyone subject their child to going to a school that's not the best it can be? And with children with disabilities, not every school can handle those. So this is so common sense, I can't even understand why someone would be against it. The system doesn't like it, the superintendents and the school system and the unions, but it's about the kids, it's not about them. And everywhere else where there's school choice, by the way, Jason, it's only 3-4% of the public that exercise it, because most schools are good. Most parents like their schools. Most kids want to stay with their friends. But where there are those, and in Texas, you know, we have 5.5 million kids in public schools. So if it's 3 or 5%, it's 100,000, 150,000 kids. When I hear these stories, well, we want to end public education. That's ridiculous. We're always going to have 90% plus of all kids in public schools. So we need school choice.
Let's talk about school funding for a moment here. The Senate approved teacher pay as part of that school funding bill, but also added education savings accounts, as you mentioned back in. The House obviously does not support that. What happens to teacher pay if the House does not pass that?
So now we call it an omnibus bill. Everything is in one bill. So teacher pay, school funding allotment, a number of things along with school choice are in one bill. So if one part of it goes down, it all goes down, and we'd come back and do it all over again.
Do you think that will pass?
I don't know. I'm very hopeful and optimistic, and again, we'll know very, very shortly.
Let's talk school security as well, too. The Senate removed it.
And by the way, again, I want to be very clear. Yeah. We'll be back on teacher pay and school funding and school choice again if it doesn't. So I don't want to think, well, it's gone. No, we'll be back.
Back in a special session.
It's up to the governor to call it, but I think he will.
You feel confident?
I do.
School security here, too. Let's talk school security here, Governor. The Senate removed a provision in the House bill that would put armed guards in all 8,000 public school campuses across the state. 1 year after Uvalde, parents are obviously wondering, is my child any safer at school, especially since the legislature has been in session for the last 5 or 6 months here? What do you tell parents across the state?
Like any other crime in our community today, we can do all we can do and we should do. Example on regular crime, so that we're not defunding police, that we're backing up our police. We want good judges who keep murderers and rapists in jail. In schools, we want to make them the most secure that we can. There's evil in the world, and no matter what bill we passed, no matter what we did, there's always going to be someone who's going to be evil and want to commit a crime. In Allen, how do you protect that mall? You know, so you can do everything you can do, and you're still going to have it. So,
did lawmakers do enough this session, do you think?
So what I'm saying is that, so we're doing all we can. We have close to $1 billion or more in different pots of money into school funding to give the schools what they need. But you could have this, you can have the most secure system. If someone leaves open the back door of a school building and there's someone who wants to commit evil, they'll find that open door. So that, I mean, it's, you have to lock it down, be tight. Our schools have to do everything they can to protect the schools. We have to do everything to fund them to do it. But there are 8,000 campuses. That's 8,000 principals. There's 1,200 school districts, 5.5 million kids, 365,000 teachers. So we have to do everything we can, and we have to be aware that evil lurks everywhere. And we know we've done more than ever before. But we put $100 million after Santa Fe, and I'm very familiar with that near my home, that school that happened. And even the $100 million we put in when Uvalde happened, we look back at that. Schools hadn't taken out all the money. There was still money left over. So
from that bill
from
five,
that bill.
6 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. And that was 2017 or 18. Yeah. And so there's still money left. So everybody has to be in. Parents, teachers, principals, superintendents, legislators. We've all got to be in on this to protect our schools. And you talked about arming, you know, having an armed person in every campus. It's easy to say, but you really need three, because campuses are big. Someone's going to call in sick one day. Someone has to take their wife to the doctor, their husband to the doctor, their kid to the doctor. They go on their lunch break. There's a meeting. In other words, because what would happen? Oh, we had an officer on campus every day, like Uvalde. They had officers, but he wasn't on that campus at that moment. He was a roaming officer. So you're really talking about two or three times 8,000 campuses. That's 24,000 trained people to protect the kids. We only have about 90,000 police officers in the entire state of Texas. That's sheriffs, that's police officers, that's constables, that's school police, that's game wardens, that's DPS troopers, about 90,000. It's hard to get people to take on these jobs, and you have to be trained, so it's easy to say. That's one of the reasons a number of us, myself included, believe in arming teachers. About a fourth of our school districts arm teachers, but a lot of school districts and parents don't want that.
Right.
That's the easiest fix to get someone and train them under the Marshals program. But my point is, I'm always weary of legislation that makes a headline but doesn't do a lot. So I just want people to know that this is a full effort that we all have to be there to protect our kids, because it's our number one responsibility. So we're going down the right path, but we all need to buy in and be very vigilant of the safety of our children.
I want to ask about gaming as well.
Yes.
Casinos, sports betting.
Right.
That seemed to have gotten farther than it ever has in the past 20 years in the legislature here. It didn't pass, obviously.
Yes.
But is there a future for gaming in the state?
So, Jason, I was very clear in the very beginning, before session. I said we didn't have the votes in the Senate. And when I said we didn't have the votes, I asked the members, okay? And I asked the Republican members. The Democrats were all in for it. But I asked the Republican, we're a Republican majority, so we don't let Democrats on major legislation, you know, run the legislation. And of the Republican senators, in January, in April, and when the House passed the one sports betting bill, we had two votes, to my knowledge, the two people who sponsored the bill out of our 19 Republicans, and I didn't have any votes for casinos out of my 19 Republicans. So we don't, you know, again, we have hundreds and hundreds of bills flowing. If you don't have votes for a bill, we don't have time to hear hundreds of bills that don't have support. So that's why they didn't move. So Gavin Massengale is a lobbyist, and he stood up and said, you know what, we just have to pass a bill. We know it won't make it, but we have to hang it around Dan Patrick and the Texas Senate. That's a bad, bad way to pass a bill. And so when you say that, the senators step back and say, we're already a no. You know we're a no. So that's your ploy. It's not very ethical. It's not very professional. And so if anything, Gavin made sure when he made that statement that the Senate was going to say, we already told you we weren't supporting it. And that's not the way to conduct business. And so he heard his own calls, let me say.
Do you see a future for gaming in this state?
You know, it's about 50-50 with Republicans. Depending on the bill, you can see a poll where there are less people supporting sports betting because not as many people are familiar with it. It's mostly young men between 20 and 40 that do it. So a lot of people even aren't familiar with it, and they don't bet on their mobile apps, and they don't bet on sports teams. Casino gaming is more familiar. People like it. They, you know, in the Dallas area, they go to Windstar, or Houston, they go over to Louisiana, they go to Vegas. Will it happen one day? Probably, but to be honest with you, but I don't know if that's 10 years or 20 years from now. Here's the deal. They spent millions of dollars lobbying on it, and for 6 months, they didn't change one Senate vote. We didn't have any votes in November. We didn't have any votes in May. So, and they only remember, casino gambling failed in the House, even though it didn't pass, and the sports betting passed by two votes at the last minute. So, and I think the way it was handled, it's going to be very interesting, because if the casino folks go after the members who voted against it, a lot of the Republican primary voters are going to stick with their people and say, we don't want it. And so they're only going to turn those people who were against it this time even to be more against it. And those who voted for it, they may have some primary challengers from people who say, so-and-so voted for this, so elect me. And so they're going to get some pressure. So when you put a jersey on people and show where they are, they aren't, it makes them targets in their primary election. So it's going to be very interesting to see. Members may come back even more against it, depending on how the primaries go.
Besides the legislature winding down, of course, the other big news is the Attorney General Ken Paxton. The House is talking about potential options over there if impeachment happens.
Yes.
An impeachment vote there would end up in the Senate for a trial. That's something we haven't seen in more than a century in this state for a statewide official. What's the process?
So the process is much like the U.S. government. When there was an impeachment, it came to the Senate, the U.S. Senate. So here, if that happens, it comes to the Texas Senate, and there will be a trial conducted. I'm not at liberty to say anything really beyond that, because I will be presiding over that case, and the senators, all 31 senators, will have a vote, and we'll set the rules for that trial as we go forward, and we'll see how that develops. But I really can't make any other comments on it.
Do you think there are votes to convict, based on what we heard
from
the House?
Jason, I can't say a word about it. Would you go to a judge and say, Judge, can you tell me how the case is going to turn out? So I'm not at liberty to say. And by the way, I don't cast a vote. The 31 members cast a vote. I preside over it. But we will all be responsible as any juror would be if that turns out to be. And I think the members will do their duty.
I want to ask about clean energy as well. The clean energy producers are saying that the Senate has unfairly targeted them, adding increased transmission costs for clean energy projects,
yeah.
New regulatory system for clean energy with SB 624. And all of it, they say, is going to hobble that industry. Yeah. I hear from folks who are in the energy industry, separate from clean energy, yeah. They say, well, we need everything to keep right. the grid going here, to keep the power on.
Yeah. Cry me a river if you have a windmill or a solar farm. The federal government pretty much pays you to do it. They're very important to be a part of the answer because they help keep our costs low and our air clean. I support it. But you have to have enough dispatchable, dependable resource, natural gas, coal and nuclear, but most of it's natural gas, so that when you hit the light switch, they come on. If we, and let me tell you what, all over the world right now, Europe is finding this out, all over the country, they're finding it out. You can't depend on your lights coming on if the wind's blowing or if the sun's out. And so in 2000, Jason, about 2% of our grid was renewable, wind and solar, mostly wind. Today it's around 35%, and in another 5 or 6 years, it'll be close to 60%. So if you're depending, let's see, Peter Lake, the PUC chairman, was quoted in Bloomberg recently, we're going to need the breath of God to get through the summer. So we've become, like other states, of being having more renewables. Now you say, well, why haven't people been building gas plants? If your viewers out there were investors in a natural gas plant and you had to pay for 100% of the plant and the other people don't really pay for 100% and they have all the advantages, for example, if you have a natural gas plant, Jason, and we have bad weather, you have a contract with the grid. You're supposed to deliver so many megawatts. You have to go out and provide that, even if it could potentially bankrupt you. On the other side, the renewables, they make a commitment of having, like I said, today it's 35% almost of our market. It'll be over 50% soon. If the wind doesn't blow, they're just like, sorry, wind didn't blow today.
They don't have to buy on the market?
No, they don't have to buy on the market. And they don't have any firming. We call firming a backup. So we're now requiring all renewables moving forward to either have battery backup or be connected to a natural gas plant. So we are fifth in the world in renewables, fifth in the world, bigger than California. And we are a natural gas state. It's clean, it's cheap. But in the last 10 years, we've hardly built any natural gas because of what I explained to you. So the renewable people, it's the climate change, Green New Deal crowd. They would like for all America and all the world to be on nothing but wind and solar. And it would crash everyone's economy, the world economy, and make it very dangerous. So we have put in incentives this session to incentivize people by building natural gas plants because it's hard to build coal or solar, sure. Nuclear these days. Although I think nuclear is going to be an answer in the future, more and more small nuclear reactors. They're several years away yet. But we have to build more natural gas. We have to have it, and it has to be now. It takes three and a half years to get a plant up and running if we start now. So we have very strong legislation. It's not anti-renewable. It's simply saying, Jason, we have enough. We have enough, and we now have to build the other. That's where we are.
How concerned are you that this might be a rough summer? We heard what the PUC commissioner said about whether the lights stay on this summer.
Sure. I'm very concerned about it. And people would say, well, why haven't we been doing something about this over the last 20 years? The way the grid was originally set up, it worked great for 20 years until Uri. But we all were somewhat aware of issues going back several years, but it was working fine. And again, 20 years ago, it was only 2% renewables. We had plenty of natural gas. So over time, there's been this push. And again, it's good, but the push is just too much. And the other issue, Jason, because of the lack of competitive balance between the two, nearly 50% of our power plants, natural gas plants, are 40 years older or more. And the life of a plant is like 65 years. So they're not, we've had some new come online, but a lot of these plants are going to be retiring in 20 or 25 years. So it's caught up with this big zeal of electric vehicles, by the way, which would really tax the grid if everybody had an electric car, electric vehicles and all windmills and all solar. It's one of the biggest scams on people around the world, and they're learning it quickly in these other countries and in America. I say a scam. It's all good at a certain level. We should have about 25-35% should be grid, should be renewable as a mix, but they want it to be all renewable. And so that's been the issue. And the other side has a big lobby and a big message. I mean, it's all you hear about every day, more renewables, Green New Deal. And the media has told this great lie. It's like electric vehicles, Jason. When people look at electric vehicle and they find out the battery alone is $25,000 to $30,000 for the battery to replace your battery, what? When it takes you 20 minutes at the gas station when most people want to be in and out, can you imagine the lines of everybody, I got to hook in here and plug up for 20 minutes, give me a break here. And it takes you 6 to 8 hours to charge your car overnight at home. And by the way, back on those batteries, what's the value of your used car going to be or your pickup truck when you sell it? Someone says, well, yeah, but I got to put a $25,000 new battery in it. So this whole deal by the left wants to destroy our whole economy, because they actually believe it works. And it works pretty well in measure. It does not work pretty well to be our dominant power source. And that's why they're crying a little bit here around Texas, because the Texas Senate and the House together have pushed back and said, we have to incentivize natural gas plants. We have to have it. So the summer could be a little rough.
Governor, thank you for the time.
Hey, always a pleasure.
Click subscribe and get Y'all-itics every week. Y'all-itics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.